This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today is Orlando Martin. He's the author of a new book called JFK, Analysis of a Shooting. Orlando has done some research into the shootings, I'm going to put it that way. And I think you'll be very interested in just how many people there were who were firing shots and how many shots were fired. And it definitely is a different story than what the Warren Commission has been telling people all these years. Orlando, welcome to Talking to America.
Welcome, Aaron. The book is titled JFK Analysis of a Shooting. It is available presently at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble Online, and Ingram Books.
You know, the Warren Commission, according to you, ignored Governor Connally's pre-surgery x-rays, those being the most crucial evidence of the shooting of the president. What does all that mean?
Well, actually, I wouldn't really say ignore, because it would be the wrong word to use, but what they did, in effect, is they replaced them with fakes. I do not believe that the governor's pre-surgery x-rays are actually the actual x-rays, and they cannot be for a number of reasons. I stated that the country has not seen the pre-surgery x-rays of the governor, and by that I mean the authentic x-rays. For example, we have x-ray commission exhibit number 682. It's the pre-surgery chest x-ray of Governor Connally, and it shows no bullet fragments. Now, we know that the bullet that impacted Connally, shattered his fifth rib. Interesting enough, we do not have, as the commission stated, zero particles, zero fragments in the chest cavity after this bullet shattered the rib, but yet we have fragments in his right wrist and left thigh. So this had to be a highly selective bullet, where the major impact was actually in the chest, and yet the commission is telling us, based on the X-ray to death percentage, Commission Exhibit 682, there's not a single fragment in the wound in Governor Connally's chest. And another thing that is interesting about that I think is worth mentioning, is the fact that if you look at the X-ray, examine them as I have, you notice there are no bone fragments in that particular X-ray. Well, when you shatter a rib, there is bound to be bone fragments in the wound. So there is no possible way that particular x-ray could be the authentic x-ray, a real pre-surgery x-ray of Connally. Another thing relative to that is the fact that x-rays dated November 29th. Dr. Ken Clark, in his statement from Parkland, he stated that immediately after the president arrived, he was taken to trauma room 1, Connally was taken to trauma room 2, and that immediately Connally was taken to surgery on the same day he had been shot. So then if surgery was conducted at the governor, I'm pretty sure that they had to know what they were looking at, so the prior x-rays had to be taken. But yet the x-rays are dated November 29th, so there's a little bit of puzzling. It's a week difference. And based on Dr. Clark's statement that Connally was taken immediately to surgery, to the operating room, it really doesn't make sense. I had a friend of mine who is a chiropractor, a doctor. Take a look at this x-ray. So now, this man is familiar with bone structure. In his profession, it has to be. And he agrees with me that those are not the x-rays of a man that had just had his fifth rib shattered by a bullet, because there is no indication of bone fragments anywhere in that x-ray. So I believe that particular x-ray has to be a fake. And also, Commission Exhibit 694 is a pre-surgery x-ray of Connally's left thigh, his femur. Now, it became known that in Parkland, Connally had bullet fragments embedded in his femur. Now, if you look at Commission Exhibit 694, there is not a single fragment on that femur. I mean, you don't have to be a doctor to deduct that. You could just look at the x-ray. So that x-ray also is not in accordance with the facts, as far as being the real pre-surgery x-rays, and honestly, they cannot be. I do not believe they are.
We should remind people that, because you mentioned November 29th, that the assassination took place on November 22nd.
Exactly.
All right, so that's an important point. You tell us that the first shot fired at the President Kennedy impacted over 130 yards away from the President's automobile.
Yeah, that is correct. if you look at the Zapruder film and Dale Myers, who did a graphic animation, computer graphic animation of the shooting, it's agreed that the first shot was taken before frame 160. As I stated in my book, somewhere around frame 155. So I gave myself a range of 150 to 155 because it's kind of hard to pinpoint the exact frame. But within that, those frames of the Zapruder film, a bullet impacted 134 yards by my measures using to scale maps of Dealey Plaza, 130 yards away from the automobile. And also that that particular bullet, when the FBI examined the residuals of the impact, they found out that he had alimony and lead, but no copper. So that impact was not resulting from a copper jacketed bullet. Now, the bullet that Oswald had employed in the assassination, they all had copper jackets. So there's a conflict there. Hoover himself wrote a memo to the commission. I believe the memo was dated August of 1964. And Hoover stated that the bullet that impacted caused that impact in the assassination. Number one, was not a regular infantry bullet in the sense that he had no copper jacket. And also, based on the impact, he could deduct, or his men could deduct, that it was a smaller caliber, that it had to be a smaller caliber than a 6.5-millimeter Carcano. So there are two indications that that bullet did not come from Oswald, that there's no possible way that it could have. Another thing indicative of that is the fact that the commission, in his Warden Report, Chapter 3, which deals mostly with the ballistics of the event, never even mentioned that impact. It's like as if it wasn't even related to the shooting, and this is a shot that happened during the shooting. And what's funny about that is the fact that Gerald Posner, who is the author of Case Closed, stated that the reason why a bullet had impacted so far from the automobile was because the bullet had first impacted a branch on the oak tree that was in front of Oswald, shed its copper jacket, and then impacted the curve on Main Street, 130 yards away, which is, you know, completely irrational. So that is pretty much the case as it pertains to that particular bullet. As a matter of fact, the commission gave it the impact point. It was air hammered out and taken to the National Archives, and it's commission exhibit number 351. But yet again, they gave it an exhibit number, but never even mentioned it in the Warren Report. So that I believe this could be conclusive enough, the preponderance of the evidence with that particular impact indicates that it was a bullet that did not come from Oswald's Carcano rifle.
In our discussion, you mentioned the commission was unable to declare which shot missed the entire limousine within their three-shot scenario.
Oh, sure. And that is the most irrational part of the Warren Report. I cannot believe that we as Americans actually believe that, the Warren Report, because in its structure, it is basically unsound. Now, here's the commission. It collects a section of the curve of South Main where it knows that a bullet impacted, a bullet that missed the automobile. So in effect, they collected the impact of the bullet that missed, but then they cannot tell you which bullet missed in the three-shot scenario. And Chapter 3 of the Warden Report is titled The Shots from the School Book Depository. Well, if you're saying there were only three shots in the shooting and you collected the impact point of a shot that missed, why can you not tell which shot missed out of three shots? I mean, even if you guessed, it would have been 33% right, you know. And that is one of the most irrational parts of the Warden Report, that they actually did that. Not only did they assign it a commission number, a commission exhibit 351, but then they cannot say whether it was the first shot fired, the second, or the third. Now, it's well known that the second shot impacted both President Kennedy and Connally. It is also known that the last shot fired impacted the president only. So that tells you that the first shot missed. I mean, if the second shot impacted both men and the last shot impacted the president only, the head wound, that only leaves the first shot fired. And what is funny about that is that the commission interviewed over 500 witnesses, looked at over 3,000 pieces of evidence. It also viewed the Zapruder film and collected the impact point of the shot that missed, but yet they cannot tell us which shot missed. So that right there is basically an insult to basic common sense.
the point you bring up about the actual entry angle of the second shot into the president's body was deliberately changed by the commission in contradiction of the facts of the shooting.
Dr. Humes, in the autopsy, determined, he was in charge of the president's autopsy, he discovered that, during the procedure that the entry wound of the second shot, Well, Framel's magic bullet was 45 degrees, and he estimated that based on what the wound represented to him. There were also two special agents from the FBI, Mr. Siebert and Mr. O'Neill, who witnesses to the autopsy that also corroborated Dr. Hume's findings. They declared in a joint memorandum that the angle of entry of the shot was 45 degrees or greater. What the commission did, the commission not only disregarded this official discovery, they hired surveyors, and they took measurements from Oswald's location, alleged location, the sixth floor of the book depository, and they found out that the angle from there into the president, had a shot being fired from there, was could not be any greater than 18 degrees, so the commission settled at 17. So not only did they completely disregard Dr. Hume's findings in the autopsy, they made up their own angle to remain consistent with Oswald as the lone gunman.
That's fascinating. During the autopsy in Bethesda, you mentioned that a wound is discovered in the back of the president's neck. Where'd that come from?
Oh, no, I know. Exactly. Chapter 2, page 60 of the Warren Report states that. Now, this is the funny part of it, that something that we could totally completely disclaim. When the president arrived at Trauma Room 1 at Parkland, they saw the head wound, and they also noticed the trachea, the throat wound, shot to the front of his throat. The doctors at Parkland looked for an exit to that particular wound, the throat wound, and could not find an exit. So at Parkland, it was determined that that particular wound had to be caused by an inbound projectile, a shot coming towards the president. And again, they were not able to find an exit for it. I'm quite sure that they checked behind the neck, and I'm quite sure that they looked at the president in general, trying to locate an exit for this particular wound, and could not. So the wound that the Warren Commission claims was found during the autopsy was not seen in Parkland, who looked at the president before the autopsy. So how could this man, and a number of doctors, we're talking Dr. Perry, Dr. Carrico, Dr. Shaw, Dr. Kemp Clark, Dr. Gregory, a number of them. You're talking five or six people, McClellan, even Dr. McClellan. So many doctors that looked at President Kennedy and missed this neck wound, yet here's the commission saying in the autopsy we discovered a neck wound, which actually, in a factual sense, was never there and could not have been there because had it been there, the doctors at Parkland would have seen it.
So you're saying there never was a neck wound, or they're just claiming there was one?
There was never a neck wound. The second shot that impacted the president below his right shoulder. If you look at Commission Exhibits 385 and 386, the impact of that particular bullet was moved up 5 inches to justify its exit at the front of the throat, which never happened because at Parkland they could not find a track. They could not find an exit for that particular wound. So Here's a commission deliberately fabricating evidence to remain with the same story of the lone gunman, which is, totally factual.
This is Talking to America. Our guest today is Orlando Martin, author of JFK, An Analysis of a Shooting. Orlando, you mentioned the trajectory orientation of the second shot through the president's body does not correlate to Oswald's alleged position in the sixth floor of the book depository building. Can you elaborate?
Sure, that is totally correct, and this is infallible, that there is no possible way that Oswald could have taken that shot. The trajectory orientation of the second shot through the president's body is conclusively and undisputedly left to right. You have to understand that the bullet did not strike bone in the president, so whoever shot this shot, the second shot into the president, with a left to right track had to be located to the left of the president. So this shot came from the president's left. It traversed the president left to right and impacted Connolly on the right side of his body. So in essence, Connolly is a marker for the trajectory orientation of the shot because we know he was seated in front and slightly to the right of the president. So by this bullet impacting him on the right side of his body, we can conclude that this bullet traverse the president left to right and then impact the Connolly. Now, Oswald, in his alleged position at the book depository, was located to the right of the president. So the track of the bullet is impossible to have been achieved from Oswald's position. I mean, and this is common sense stuff. This is so conclusive. There is no possible way, based on the track that the bullet carved through the president's body and through Connolly's, the impact point on the right, Connolly's near his right underarm, that particular track is impossible for Oswald to have achieved it from his position to the right of the president. So whoever shot that shot was located, which I identified in the book also. I also identified all the locations where the shots most likely came from. That individual was located to the left of the president versus Oswald to the right. Any shot that Oswald could have taken at the president would have been endowed with a right-to-left trajectory, which is completely the opposite of the second shot fired.
You mentioned there are two large fragments recovered from the president's automobile by the Secret Service in Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
You know what the fragments were and what the Secret Service did with them?
This is kind of puzzling in a way. These fragments were not discovered in the car until the car arrived in Washington, D.C., which tells us that the Secret Service had not inspected the car immediately after the shooting. Now, the car gets to Washington, D.C. on the same day of the shooting, November 22nd, and then they discovered these two large fragments inside the automobile. They determined that one was the front of a bullet and the other was the back of a bullet. The experts that analyzed these fragments could not declare if these fragments were from one bullet or from two separate bullets. Now, as a conclusive fact of the shooting, every fragment that was recovered from the automobile based on a three-shot scenario had to come from the same bullet, the last bullet that impacted the president, because that bullet was the only bullet that actually provided fragments to the interior of the car. If you're saying three shots were fired, one missed, so we know that that particular bullet didn't contribute any fragments to the interior of the car. The second bullet was recovered in Parkland Hospital, practically intact. So that those large fragments did not come from that particular bullet. Then the only bullet left is the bullet that impacted the president on the head. So that every single fragment, besides those two large fragments, there were others. But every single fragment located or discovered inside the automobile had to come from the same bullet. Only the last shot fired, which contributed fragments to the interior of the car. And another thing that relevant to that is the fact that that bullet completely disintegrated. The bullet that impacted President Kennedy on his head completely disintegrated, pulverized, as it was described by the doctors in Parkland. So now what we have is a bullet. If you're saying we recovered the front and the back of a bullet, then the bullet that impacted the president on the head only pulverized in its middle portion, because the front and the back were found as large fragments. So it totally does not make any sense.
Well, our government doesn't make any sense either, but that's another story.
I agree with you on that, but let's not go there.
Yeah, all right. You mentioned frame 230 of the Zapruder film shows that Governor Connolly was not yet injured in his right wrist. What
exactly
is the significance of that?
Well, that is highly significant within the spectrum of the entire shooting, the scope of the shooting. The second bullet that impacted the president at frame 224 exited the governor at frame 225. Myers, who did that graphic animation, actually agrees with that, and so does Posner as an author himself. So we all know that bullet exited Connolly at 225. We were told that immediately after exiting his chest, that bullet impacted his right wrist and then onto his left thigh. The bullet not only fractured the governor's radius bone, it also caused severe nerve damage in the area. So we could say that by frame 226 of the Zapruder film, the governor had been impacted on his right wrist with a broken radius and nerve damage, and on his left thigh near his knee. Then at frame 230, here's Governor Connolly raising up his right hand, which, in my opinion, would have been impossible to do with a broken radius and nerve damage, and still clutching onto his hat. He puts his right hand at his chest, and then turns to his right on his jump seat. So my point in that particular frame of 230 is that at that point, there was no way that Governor Connolly was impacted by a bullet on his right wrist. He would not have been able to raise his arm like that and hold on to his hat with broken radius and severe nerve damage. So the impact to his wrist did not happen until frame 295, as I point in the book, but based on my study of the Saputo film, where he actually vocalizes. You see the governor, his mouth is agape. He's actually showing pain and so on. So at frame 295 was a bullet that was shot to impact the president on the head. Much as every single shot taken in assassination was aimed at the president's head, but there were a number of misses. And this bullet also missed the president's head and impacted Connally on his right wrist after he had turned to his right in his seat, in his jump seat. So it's the only time in the shooting where this alignment happens. The right arm with the left leg after he completely turned. And then a shot missed the president's head and impacted Connally on his right wrist.
You mentioned that what you call a preemptive shot tracing analysis of the shots fired at President Kennedy conclusively indicates that these shots do not originate from the sixth floor of the book depository building. Are you suggesting it's more than two shooters?
There were actually three shooters in my study. And this is something that we can conclusively prove today. Today we have the ability to do something that was never done in none of the investigations of President Kennedy's assassination, not by the Ramsey Clark, not by the Records Review Board, not the Warren Commission itself, not the Rockefeller Inquiry. Nobody ever did this, and it's the most basic and elemental thing that should have been done in a shooting, in any shooting. I was going to say in a shooting of a president, but it's the most elemental thing that is usually done in any shooting, any citizen that gets shot, and that is a proper shot tracing analysis. What happened in May of 1964, the FBI conducted a reenactment of the shooting, and they only traced the second shot fired at the president that concentrated at the point of impact from Oswald's alleged position. And this is where they used the rifle and a camera aimed through the scope of the rifle and so on. And they determined that Oswald had the probability to hit the president. Well, that is not the way you trace a shot. You trace the shot, the experts, any expert would agree with me on this, from the point of impact back towards the point, suspected point of origin, then you mark the trajectory, then you have to take into account, because you're tracing and the nature of the procedure, you have to take into account the angular entry and the terminal final deflections of this bullet. Were we as a country to do that today, to President Kennedy's shooting, place the car at the frames where the shots were taken, which we are well aware of, we could prove conclusively and without a shadow of a doubt that not only were there three shooters, because these shots came from three different directions, but that a total of five shots were fired, and we could prove that.
But you know when the Warren Commission report is going to be made available? I understand it's a 50-year moratorium on some information, or am I wrong?
Well, it is available. If you go online, you could get the report.
Okay, the whole
thing. It's been available since September of 1964,
which
is practically the release date. But there are some documents that they're holding because of the 50-year moratorium that they put on it.
That's what I was getting. Now, what are those documents about? That's what I was trying to get.
No one knows. That is. But my point is this. There is nothing on record, on paper, that will solve the assassination of President Kennedy, because words could be judged to be conjecture. Half of these people, or if not more, are already dead. So it's kind of right. It will be difficult to prove these claims. So I do not believe that any secret document is going to reveal the truth. The only way that we as a country can conclusively establish at least one fact of the assassination, that is multiple shooters, five shots. And the only way that we could prove that is by conducting a proper shot trajectory analysis, which was never applied to the assassination of President Kennedy. And then you have to wonder why, when I'm quite sure that people in this country knew how to trace a shot, why was that procedure not applied to the assassination of a president? We're talking a president here, not just a regular citizen, but we're talking a president. And people that were familiar with the procedure failed to apply it in its proper form because I believe they were fully aware of what it was going to reveal. And, of course, what they told the American public is here you have Oswald as the lone gunman and only three shots. Well, that is a total and complete lie. That is totally and completely false. We can prove today, we have the ability to do it, that three shooters fire five shots on President Kennedy from three different locations, which I do identify these locations in the in my book, JFK Analysis of a Shooting.
Has there been any contact to you from people in the government who actually could conduct these tests?
No one has dared. As a matter of fact, I contacted our Attorney General, Mr. The Honorable Eric Holder, made him aware of that procedure, saying, why don't we do this? This should have been done day two, the day after. It should have been done. It's such a basic and elemental procedure in the shooting. I made him aware of the procedure. I mailed Mr. Holder, our Attorney General. I mailed him a copy of the book, and I directed him to Chapter 18, which describes the procedure. And I made him aware, if we do this, we will determine, without the slightest shadow of a doubt, that there were multiple shooters involved. And that was a couple of months ago. And Mr. Holder has not bothered to answer my letters yet, and I do not believe he will.
Well, surprise, surprise. Okay. Why don't we tell people again where they can obtain your book, if you would, please?
Oh, the book is available at Amazon.com. It's also available at Barnes & Noble online. And I've made a website for the book. The website for the book is also available at the website. And the website is JFKAnalysis.com. And if you go to the book's website, you can see some pictures, and you can also see, read a portion of it, the introduction and other things that I put on the website.
Why don't you give that website address one more time, if you would, please?
Yeah, it's www.jfkanalysis.com.
Okay, very good. Well, Orlando, I appreciate you coming here today and to talk to us about your book, and I wish you the very best with it, and please let us know if you ever hear from the government.
I will, definitely will. And like I said, this is the complete package that we have the ability to prove the facts as never before in the president's assassination.
Orlando, thank you again. This has been Talking to America. Our guest has been Orlando Martin, author of the book JFK, An Analysis of a Shooting. My name is Aaron Zellman. I've been your host. And please remember, if you don't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.